All right, now the normal heart sounds are called S1 and S2. So, now how many semilunar valves do we have? Two. Now which side of the heart has to pump harder, left or the right? The left. Now sometimes, especially in younger people, what will happen is the left side, because it has to squeeze a little bit harder, the semilunar valves don't close at exactly the same time, and you get what we call splitting of S2. So ordinarily it would be bum bum, bum bum, bum bum. And with splitting it'll be bum brum, bum brum, bum brum, bum brum. It's still one sound, but it kind of sounds like there's two parts to it. Bum brum, bum brum. That's called splitting. And most of the time it's normal. Now, there's additional sounds we call sound 3 and sound 4, S3 and S4. These are sometimes called gallops. So how many of you have ever played Lone Ranger? Okay, how many of you have ever ridden a horse? Okay, now, what are the four gaits that a horse has? Trot, canter, gallop, and walk. All right, now, what is a trot like? When you're riding the horse, what is a trot like? Yeah, it's a very bouncy walk, right? It's 4 feet doing their thing. What's a gallop like? It's 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Because two of the feet are hitting at the exact same time. So it's going to go, and you feel like, ba-da-bum, 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 ba-da-bum. So these sounds, because they have an extra sound, are going to be called gallops. Ba-da-bum, ba-da-bum, ba-da-bum. As opposed to splitting, which is bum-prum, bum-prum. So it's a distinct third sound. One sound that's kind of split into two parts. Now, when you are young nurses, like we all are, when you listen to a patient, if you hear an extra sound, we don't really care whether you can tell, is that an S3, is that an S4? All we want you to know is that I listened, there's an extra sound there. Now go get someone who has more experience. So, but what we do want you to know is, if they say, oh, that's an S4 or that's an S3, what that means. So S3 is usually a sign of fluid overload. Now, when I say usually, the reason I say usually is because in young people, it can sometimes just be a normal finding. But in the elderly population, middle-aged and on, it's most likely going to be a sign of fluid overload. And what are the three major causes of fluid overload? Heart failure, kidney failure, all right, liver failure. All right, and so heart failure is the major thing that we associate S3 sounds with. So now, we talked about heart failure yesterday with respiratory. What was the sign that we said for respiratory failure, or respiratory? What would be the respiratory sign of heart failure? It's a sound. What is that sound? Crackles. So crackles are a sign that there's fluid overload associated with heart failure. In the heart, what would the sound be? S3 gallop. So what we're beginning to do is we're beginning to put together a picture of our patient with heart failure. So we listen to their lungs, we might hear crackles. If they cough up sputum, it might be pink and frothy, like little bubbles. Edema, yes, pulmonary edema. And in their heart, they have an S3 gallop. All right, now S4, on the other hand, is a sign of ventricular resistance. How many of you have ever opened up Velcro? What does it sound like? It doesn't want to open, does it? But it wants to resist being opened. Now, in patients who have very strong hearts, strong as in overdeveloped, They've got too much muscle in the heart. The heart becomes stiff and doesn't want to open. We call that ventricular sclerosis. Sclerotic means hardening. So hardening of the ventricles. So it's going to resist filling up. And that's called an S4 sound. It's a sign of ventricular hypertrophy and sclerosis. No.
So you can't tell the difference between S3 and S4 by sound, or you can't?
You can, but we're not going to be, we don't care about that at our level.
Lungs,
say again?
S4
has crackles. No. No, S4 is just in the ventricles. Now, let's be very careful about the S3 and crackles. Crackles are caused by fluid in the lungs. S3 is caused by fluid in the
heart.
Okay. Now, it's fluid overload, but that overload now is going to be in the heart, not edema in the lungs. All right. Did I talk about ventricular hypertrophy a couple days ago in PathoPharm or something? I seem to dream that I did it. So let me go ahead and talk about that for a moment. What is the purpose of the heart, ultimately? To pump blood. And in order to pump blood, we need to have blood in it. Now, do you want to have a nice big open chamber? Yes. Because you want to be able to get lots of blood in there, so you don't pump lots of blood. Now, you don't want it too big, because that'd be too hard to pump. But you want to make sure there's a good amount of room for blood to get in there. Now, what would happen if a person started working out their heart? Yeah, I talked about this in the blood pressure lecture. Their heart muscle would get stronger, and in getting stronger, it would also get thicker. Now, as it gets thicker, what does it start doing? You start losing chamber volume. So now, even though the heart is stronger and can pump more blood, it has less blood to pump. Is that a good thing? No. So we don't want to exercise the heart in terms of giving it, making it pump against too much pressure. Because that will make it thick and big, and that's not what we want.
How would you do that?
Well, how do you do that? How do you...
Would it be like high blood pressure?
Well, yeah, this would be high blood pressure.
Okay.
Yeah. This would be putting a load against the heart, having too high a blood pressure. Now, how can you make your chambers bigger? Yes, how do you get nice big chambers? What kind of exercise? Cardiovascular. But any exercise will improve heart function, but cardiovascular exercise in particular will increase chamber size. But now I'm going to tell you something. There's no such thing as cardiovascular exercise.
Cardio?
There's no such thing as cardiovascular exercise. Think about it for a moment. When you do cardio, what do you really do?
You would have more than 30 minutes.
You do what for the more than 30 minutes? Say, heart pump, heart pump, pump, faster heart, faster heart. What do you do? What do you move? What do you move in order to do cardio? Muscles. So you're really just doing muscle exercise. There's no such thing as cardio. Yeah, but are you exercising your heart? No. What you're doing is you're exercising your other muscles, which increases your metabolic demand, which tells the heart, hey, can you pump a little bit harder and faster, please? But it's not the same thing as exercising your heart. You can only exercise your heart indirectly. If you want to truly exercise the heart, you give it high blood pressure. Then it has to pump against the high blood pressure, and it gets stronger and bigger, and that's bad. So... there's no such thing as cardio.
You're pumping the heart. You're pumping the heart, but it's not exercise.
Yeah. It's a semantic difference, but I think it's an important one.
Cardio.
Who here lifts weights? Now, here's a fun thing for you to do sometime. Who does squats? Heavy weight squats.
Oh.
All right.
I lift 200.
Okay. What I want you to do, put on, you know, fairly heavy weight for you. Do 10 squats, rest for 1 minute, do 10 more squats, rest for 1 minute, do 10 more squats. You'll be as out of breath as if you've run a marathon. maybe not a marathon, but you'll be out of breath quite, I mean, you'll be like doing the same thing for your heart. You can get the exact same effect, cardio effects, doing resistance exercise if you keep the intensity up. Anyway, that's my soapbox. Part of my PhD was exercise physiology, so I have some little tweaks that I'm like, stupidness. Yeah. Anyone here ever have to take a lifetime fitness class or some kind of, you know, yeah, general fitness course? Yeah. Here they have to take a lifetime fitness class, and the textbook they use is the stupidest textbook in the whole world. It says dumb things like, there are many types of fitness, but cardiovascular fitness is by far the most important. And I'm going, no, it's not. If you're not cardiovascularly fit, can you live a long time? Yeah, sure. Yeah. Now, let's say your fitness in terms of balance is gone, and you slip and fall and crack your head in the bathroom and drown in 2 inches of water. Which one was more important? Yeah. Let's say that your grip strength is so weak that you can't open a can, and you can't turn a doorknob, and you starve to death in your own apartment. Which one was more important? So that whole, this is the most important, I think is just kind of stupid. There's different kinds of fitness. They're all important. Cardiovascular is the least important. All right, murmurs. Murmur. A murmur is a sound that's caused by turbulent blood flow in the heart. And the turbulent blood flow is usually going to be caused by malfunctioning valves. Now, valves can malfunction one of two different ways. What are those two different ways? Okay, they normally open and they normally close. So the two ways they can mess up. They don't open enough or they don't close enough. If they don't close enough, we call that prolapse or regurgitation. If they don't open enough, we call that stenosis. All right, so if they don't open enough, we call it stenosis. And if they don't open enough, we call it, or so they don't close enough, we call it regurg or prolapse. Sometimes you'll hear the term
open enough is prolapse?
No, open enough
if it
closed is prolapse.
Yeah. Did I say it backwards?
Yeah,
if it doesn't, okay, if it doesn't open enough, stenosis. If it doesn't close enough, regurge or prolapse. Sometimes you'll hear the word insufficiency, and that's kind of a vague word because it doesn't let you know which way it goes. Now, murmurs are graded on the loudness scale of 1 to 6. This is very subjective. You run into one doctor who says, oh, you have a murmur. You go to another doctor and they go, I don't know what he's talking about. I don't hear a murmur. Yeah, it's, you know, it happens all the time in healthcare. So, you know, someone will go to their doctor and they'll say, you've got a murmur. Let me send you to a cardiologist. The cardiologist says, I don't hear a murmur. Go home. But the louder it is, the higher the number. A grade 1 is barely hearable. A grade 6, you can hear it across the room without a stethoscope. I mean, you just walk the room and just like, whoosh, whoosh, like, where's that ocean coming from? So some additional causes beyond valve defects are increased blood velocity and decreased blood viscosity. All right, pumping action of the heart. Before we can pump blood, we must have blood in the system. The amount of blood in the heart before it contracts is called preload. Volume of blood in the heart before systole. Oh, that's great. Now, what is the very end of, what happens right before systole? Okay, we have diastole. Now, what's the very end of diastole called? Presystole. And right after presystole, we call that end diastolic. So the amount of blood in the heart right before it pumps is sometimes called end diastolic volume, or EDV. Now, afterload is the amount of resistance the heart has to pump against in order to pump that blood, that preload, out of the heart. So, afterload is basically diastolic blood pressure. Stroke volume is the amount of the blood, is the amount of blood the heart actually squeezes out of the heart in one squeeze. And ejection fraction is when we take the stroke volume, the amount of blood that it pumped out, and we divide that by the end diastolic volume, which is the amount of blood there was in the first place. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so if you have 5 liters of blood going through your heart in a minute, mm-hmm.
Yes. Right. So imagine for a moment, let's do some math since you bring it up. That we have two, let's imagine for a moment that we have two people who both have exactly 5 liters per minute. Now, for the sake of our maths, we don't want to deal with fractions. We're going to convert this to milliliters. So how many milliliters? Okay, 5,000 per minute. 5,000 mils per minute. All right, now, on the one hand, we have someone who's got a resting heart rate of 60. And on the other hand, we have someone who has a resting heart rate of 80. So what is this person's stroke volume? 50 divided by 60 is going to give us, here, I'll cancel the zeros for you. How many of you learned how to factor in school? How to factor numbers? Okay. Factoring is a shortcut to math. So, especially division. So what we do is we cancel the zeros. Now we've got a 6 and a 500. You factor that. They can both be factored by 2. So if you factor out 2, then you've got 3 and 250. And can you divide 250 by 3? Mm-hmm. Sure you can, because 25 by 3, what's 24 divided by 3? 250 divided by 3. Well, let's just approximate. What's 24 divided by 3? What's 24 divided by 3? 8. So it's approximately 80. If you want to be a little more precise, it would be 83.3333. See, you can go really fast just by doing that. On this side, we're going to cancel those zeros. Now we're going to factor again by 4, or by 2. So that gives us 250 divided by 4. Can we do that one? Yes, we absolutely can. And what would it be? 60-something. 62, to be exact-ish. What? That means approximate.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, this person over here has an ejection volume or stroke volume of 80 milliliters. This person over here had a stroke volume of 60 milliliters. Now, does that in itself tell you anything about how their heart is doing? It doesn't necessarily tell you how well the heart is doing, how efficient it is. It just says, here's how much it puts out. That might be good, it might be bad, we don't know. Now, we can measure efficiency of the heart's pumping action by dividing this stroke volume by the amount of blood that was in the heart to begin with. So let's say that in both these patients, they had an end diastolic volume of 120 milliliters. EDV. So divide that out. What do you get? Cancel the zeros. Factor the fours. You're going to get 2 over 3. And that turns out to be 0.66. Or 66%. telling you, you got to learn how to factor. Over here, it would be 1/2. Going backwards now because I'm running out of room. It would be 1/2 or approximately 50%. Now, 66% versus 50%. Which one is doing better? 66%. So, generally speaking, ejection fraction is a measure of efficiency of a heart. It's how much blood they were able to squeeze out compared to how much they started with. Now, normal ejection fractions are going to range from about 65 to 75%. Once a person gets lower than 50, that person is considered to have heart failure. Once a person gets down to 10, they're considered to have what we call end-stage heart failure or end-stage heart disease. And the only cure for that, what were we talking about this morning? Immunosuppressants? We'd give them cyclosporin for it? Come on. You can do it. It's a T word. You end up with type 4 immune reaction. Cell mediated. All right. Okay, let's get back up. The heart. The heart is really not doing so well. There's no hope it's ever going to come back. The person's going to die unless they get... Oh, someone who... Transplant, yes. You got to speak up, especially with all that noise out there. So, transplant. So, the cure for end-stage heart disease is a transplant. All right. Whew, that was fun.